everybody. Welcome to the Culture Shock Podcast. My name is Demi Adeboye, and here with my special guest. Would you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Harriet Musgraft. Hello, everybody.
Hey. We just met in Shaper. It's a great tool. It's the best way to network if you meet new people in business. Tell me about what you do on a day-to-day.
I would probably describe myself as a bit of an operations consultant. So I go into businesses that want to scale up. I look at all their core processes, and I try to help them improve it.
Right.
And that's where I spend most of my time, or I'd like to say I probably spend most of my time trying to get the clients that I then do that with.
How did you get that skill in terms of operations?
So I actually originally worked at McDonald's.
Okay.
Within their ops team. And I learned very quickly how important operations are. It's a bit of an interesting place to have learnt it, but McDonald's is probably, I would say, like operational kings. Every single company just tries to imitate them, the systems, imitate the way they do things. Mm. So lots and lots of like corporate espionage happens where they're trying to trying to get in and work out what McDonald's is doing to the next thing they're going to do to improve the system, the next way that they're going to do the management programs or their, like, the kitchen and what the new releases are going to be, self-service, all those kind of things. So it's a...
It's interesting. It's like you got Burger King just lurking in the background, just finding out how things are done.
It's really funny, but you would be surprised, like, how... Because it's valuable, and it's why they're the market leaders, and why they're so far ahead of everybody is because they never really stop constantly improving their processes. And when you're in it, you see how much it is every single year, time and time again. You think that you've got it down, and then new operational processes are brought in constantly, and it is why they are the best.
Even with what you said with the whole sort of the machines taking over the cash registers. Even when they rebuild their buildings, the McDonald's is never outdated. It's just the little things, right?
Yeah. I mean, they have like 12 systems, 12 operational systems that they continually work on, continually systemize, trying to make everything digital. And even like just one of those systems will be service, and all you're seeing at the front is just the improvement on the service. But there's like all the ones in the back. It's why they're consistent.
Yeah.
Everything is very, like, you do it this way, from start to finish. So this
is almost like a structure.
In every single area of that business, there is structure. Like, there is not one process. Mm. Like, I've never, ever worked. I've worked in operations with lots of other companies as well, and I've just never worked with a company like McDonald's because I think that when they were founded, they were literally founded on structure, on processes, and it's just continued.
It's just literally, it's just skyrocketing, and it never stops. And I guess you never think about McDonald's ever closing down because of lack of innovation or lack of customer demand or whatever the case may be. It was adapting, and I guess with everything that you kind of learn, you probably gain a lot of skills and taking it to where you are right now.
I think I just saw what happened is I just saw the value in processes and that if you went to scale, so this is the thing. Obviously processes aren't that important when you first start a business, and they shouldn't be. Like, you should make your business work. Like, that is the most important thing. Like,
absolutely.
Go out there, get in the market, make some sales.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you want to begin to scale up, I think a lot of people throw people at it and say, this is the way I scale. I hire 20 people and that's me scaling. But what you'll actually find is before you hire anyone, you should look at your processes and make sure that they're functioning to the highest level, that they're streamlined, that they're easy. And that's when you'll really be able to scale. Because otherwise there's just constant difficulties, and I think a lot of difficulties people face when they're scaling, they don't even realise that it's because they don't have processes in place. They just assume it's time or energy or money, but it's actually, the root cause always comes back to, because a business has like HR process, a sales process, a marketing process, an operations process, a finance process, a data process, a tech process, and if they are not all systemized, if they're all manual, you'll drown when you're trying to grow. Or you just throw people at it.
Yeah.
And then that, then your HR process keeps getting inundated and it's just kind of a knock-on effect that it will just cause other problems elsewhere in the business. So.
Yeah. And I think you just mentioned so many key points. I mean, first of all, people. You know, you can hire the best kind of people and you can hire the people that you think are good for you, but with processes, it's almost like you have your vision in mind what you want the business to be and keeping that structure so that everyone kind of falls in line to that. But I think when you have some businesses or business leaders or CEOs or whatever the case may be, they might be like, okay, I know my vision and I expect you to know it too. And that becomes the problem as well because you overwork your staff to build a vision that you haven't mapped out for them.
Yeah, there's no process for the goals and the vision, even that is a process.
Yeah.
When I... when it's normally the first thing that I will work on whenever I work with any startup, especially when they're more early stage. But that being said, normally sometimes even when they've just received like a $5 million investment and they still don't have the fundamentals in place of like, what are we, where are we heading, why are we heading there and how are we going to head there? And if your staff don't know that, then you're not all like going in the same direction.
Yeah.
And so you need a process in place for that. It needs to be like, look, you come in the company, boom, this is your onboarding, and you immediately understand where we're heading, what the vision is, what the mission is, how we're going to get there. And they need to understand like their place within the whole to make sure that they're fitting into it. You've got to be
able the mission
cohesive.
Statement and everything. Right? Yeah. So important. I think we all look at it like, oh, this is, you know, cheesy. Like, oh, what the company goals are, the values are. You're just like, you know, you try and find your alignment towards it, but I think the best organisations that actually thrive are the ones that people believe in the ethos of what the organisation is trying to achieve. Even if it's like something that's giving back, there's always some element to it that identifies with you as a person.
Absolutely.
But if it's just about, you know, oh, I'm here to get paid, you're just going to find whatever means to do the job as, you know, low as possible. Yeah.
And you're also going to miss opportunities where you don't even realise you could be helping the company achieve their goals. If you don't know what their goals are, there might be something that you see that only you can see because you're the only person in that position doing that particular job.
True.
And, you know, like the CEO, they can't see that. They're not in the day-to-day in the same way. And you could really make change within a company and you won't even realize it and you won't realize your importance if you don't know where you're heading.
Do you think CEOs, or you know, just if you look at businesses as a whole, should be at the ground level, like almost a flat structure to sort of find out who's doing what and how they can help to sort of, you know, improve the business and even be contactable?
Okay, so this is an interesting question. And I think it's very dependent on the person and who the CEO is. I don't think you can make it... I don't think there's a simple solution to being able to say what a CEO should or should not do. For me, it's more about the team and everybody performs a different role in a team. So it might not necessarily be the CEO that's down there. I think there's certainly some of the C-level that should be down there. But it kind of depends on their personality and their strength and how they do it. So I always end up being a COO. In most, you know, like I'm an ops expert, that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to end up being the chief operations officer. But that's very much me. I like to be involved in the here and now. My sister, who obviously I've been a business partner with, she's always the CEO and she's the vision. So she looks forward, she wants to know where we're going, how we're going to get there. She's the strategist is what I'd say, and I'm like the implementer. It tends to be how we would work and partner together. So, but that's not to say that I couldn't be the CEO. Again, still doing the working within the company and have a COO that looks forward a bit more. It's that, that's where I'm saying it depends on the type of person I think you are, that you need like an implementer and a strategist. And I feel like the implementer should definitely, if you lose touch with the operations, you're gonna find it hard to implement things. Because you're not gonna know what, you're not gonna know how to make it better because you're not gonna know the problems that people are facing within your company. And sometimes that's the CEO who does that role, but sometimes it might be a COO.
Yeah.
Or a CMO or a CFO or, you know, head of ops. It doesn't, and you know, like it could be anything, but as long as you've got that in the leadership team, I think you're all right.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way to sort of, you know, be self-aware of what you can do and what you can delegate to someone else and give that title to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And play to your strengths.
Absolutely.
The best way that you work.
Mm. In terms of, you know, self-awareness and focusing on your strengths, I guess you help with the operations side, but, you know, with people who are beginning to sort of build their companies and, you know, start up in business, there's always this risk of failure and what that might be to them and how to sort of overcome it. Is there a way where people can sort of understand those risks of failures and probably just, you know, work towards, obviously, an end goal of actually being happy with what they do?
Okay, so you're going to fail. Yeah. Like, it's a fact. You will absolutely hit failure, and not just once. And the failures just get different. Mm. Like, but you just have to use them as learning experiences. I think I've had some pretty epic failures and worked in companies that have had a lot of struggles. Mm. And I've had epic failures personally. And to me, it's less about... it's less about the failure, more about learning that it's just part of the process and that you have to kind of forge ahead and take... the way I see it is take more action, okay? Because failure will happen. So if you put all your eggs in one basket and then failure happens, that's going to hurt. So if you, if you're doing... let me... example, sales calls, yeah?
Yeah.
You want your business to work and you're like, right, I'm going to go, I'm going to get some customers, I'm going to ring 10 people every day and sell them my business. So what I would probably say is that of the 10 people you ring, on most days, none will purchase. So instead of feeling like that's a failure, I would say, like, up the ante and take more action, because then it stops you from... you don't seem to be affected by the failure as much. So instead of ringing 10 people, ring 40 people.
Exactly.
And then when you only get two, it doesn't feel like a failure. You actually finish your day and you go, yeah, I got two people.
Yeah.
But I do think that's the kind of mentality you have to be successful in business. You've got to be relentless and just keep pushing, because people don't want to buy from you, okay?
Yeah,
they don't want to, and I'm sure that everybody gets fed up with people selling to them, so they know what it feels like.
Yeah.
But it doesn't... there are those people out there that whatever you are selling is right for them, and it's not easy finding them, so you've got to be pretty determined to continue to find them and just keep going.
Yeah, I think you mentioned so many key points again, because you're looking at your customer base, and you're trying to say, okay, this is my target, I'm going to keep going. Sometimes you might over-strategize, like, this is the way it's going to be. And I know from a process standpoint, you might have your targets to say, it's only going to be this amount that I need to achieve. That's my quota. I'm going to go for it. And when you underperform, it's like, what did I do? And you start self-evaluating yourself too much, being too critical, and maybe that hinders your performance.
But
I think you just said it again. Like, it is a process. You need to keep going. And this is something that you want to achieve at the end goal. This is something that you have to get used to, because you're going to go through ups and downs and just... you know, bounce back through them as well.
Let your failure spur you on. Like, that's what mine does. If I fail, I'm like, right, I've got to go harder. I am clearly not going hard enough. If I am failing, it's because I'm not going hard enough, so I'm going to go harder. And I don't mean as in, like, work yourself to death. That's not what I mean. I mean, like, mentally step up your game and be like, okay, like, brush it off. Let's go in even harder. Because it's not easy to succeed. Right? Because if it was, everyone would do it. Like, so many businesses fail, and they fail because it's not easy. And I think people grossly underestimate the level of work and dedication. And just, like, how hard it can be on you mentally, as well as... you can, like, get geared up and be like, I'm going to do 12-hour days. But again, if 12-hour days were a guarantee of success... everyone would do it.
Exactly.
That's it. It's not that. It's having the mental strength to just be like, I'm not going to give up. It doesn't matter that I've just failed. Learn from that. Not going to do it again.
Yeah.
let's go again with something else. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And I'm going to keep trying, and I'm just going to be relentless.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a difference between being relentless and also being self-evaluating, saying, what do I need to pivot? How do you figure that out?
Yeah, because you can't be beating a dead horse. Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think... okay, so when you're starting a business, test your market first. Mm-hmm. And this is something that very few people do, and it's what I say to every single founder that I work with in early stage startups. I think nowadays, a lot of people create, in like quite a bad way, a lot of people will create a service or product that they like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that but they sense. Have no idea whether this is a service or product that anybody wants.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean... I cannot explain to you how many times this happens.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an assumption made that it's going to be, people are going to buy it. Mm-hmm. And it's not true. Like, I hate to kind of burst everyone's balloon, but go and sell it first.
Mm-hmm.
You know when I was saying don't get distracted in the fluff?
Yeah.
I think people are like, oh, I'll go and I'll do social media and I'll do this and I'll do that and I'll try this. Don't. Go and get some customers. Mm-hmm. Like... So sometimes I talk to people and be like, no, I need to raise some money so I can get an MVP made so then I can go sell it. And I'm like, instead of getting too many people are focused on raising money than making a business that works.
Yeah,
so go try and sell it, test the market, find out what people want, because then it might even change what you develop. Let your market tell you what they want rather than you dictating to them.
Mm.
Yeah? Like that's the difference. Mm. Like, and I think that if you can start off on that foot, then be relentless, because your market's already validated you.
Yeah.
They've already gone, yes, I want this. Yes, I need it. So then you're like, right, I've just got to find you. I've got to find more and more people like you, and I've got to keep hunting them down.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's just about being relentless. But if you go off and you make this big fancy product and you're like certain it's going to blow up and everyone's going to be on it, use it, and you've not once actually ever... given it to the market, you've never once even tested the market, you've never, and when I say test the market, I don't mean like do market research, which people always think I mean, and they'll turn to me and they'll be like, no, there's this much money in the market, and this is what, and
I'm like, studies, but
like, that's a business degree, that's not the real world, go sell it to them, right, and actually hear what they say to you, that's testing the market. Like, if you want to, a great example is me at the moment. I have sold my products before I bothered to get a website, before I bothered to set up my email. it's bad. I'm just like in the ether.
Yeah.
And people always use it as an excuse to me. They're like, but if you don't have a website, people won't believe you. And I'm like, no, they will believe me because I don't talk nonsense.
Mm.
I know what I'm selling. I know what I'm talking about. So when I sit down and I speak to a founder, like, oh, I do have that problem. Oh, no, I have been through that. Oh, no, this is what I'm struggling with. And I'm like, yeah, because I do. They don't care as they're sat talking to me whether or not my website's finished. It will be finished. But it's that kind of thing. If I tested my market, before I go bothering to make like a big funnels of my website and lead pages and adverts and all that kind of thing, I picked up the phone to people and I was like, are you facing these problems in your company?
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. Would you want a solution? Would you pay me for that solution? And they're like, yeah. Fantastic. Do you want to sign it now? Because even then, sometimes I don't like it when people go, yeah, I would if you did it. And I'm like, okay, great. When do we start? And so I'll actually get traction. I'll actually get traction before I even then invest the time in building the brand around it and building that kind of thing, because the market's validating my idea. I'm happy to go and put that time and effort into it.
But the thing is, because you mentioned so many things, and I keep saying mentioning so many things, but...
Sorry, I'm just talking a lot.
No, this is very good, because I guess there is a bit of a... Not saying there's a problem, but... There's been a rise of a lot of entrepreneurs, I'm putting that in quotes, a lot of business owners.
I call them entrepreneurs.
Entrepreneurs. And I guess with social media, Instagram being popular, you can just put down your title.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of things that look like you're busy, but you're not busy. You're just networking, or you're just trying to front and say you have something.
Yeah.
Is it a generational thing where entrepreneurship is because it's perceived to be this fast route to success,
yes,
people are taking the fastest way to imitate that, yes, versus putting the groundwork. Is there something that, let's say, the millennial generation is missing, or even Generation Z is missing in terms of entrepreneurship?
I think that's absolutely what it is. Mm. I think people think it's easy, and it's not at all. And it's probably why so many people like go into it and immediately drop out of it and just go, oh yeah, you know what, this actually isn't for me. Because I think it's not even just that. I think everybody's sold on this big idea of these big tech businesses and how, you know, Zuckerberg just like built Facebook,
yeah,
in his bedroom and all this kind of stuff. And that, you know, that happened, but that's not how 99% of the businesses are built. They're built through like hard. In fact, don't get me wrong, Mark Zuckerberg will have worked very, very hard.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just this thing of, I think people see it as like a quick, easy fix.
Mm.
And exactly like you say, like, oh, super fast route to success. I'll just, I don't know, maybe it's just social media in general. Like, everybody's just fronting and saying, look, everything's so easy. Everything's so great. Look at my lifestyle, look at all these things I do, I'm out here hustling, and they're like pretending they're hustling,
yeah,
but in my head I'm like, no, go hustle, stop telling me you're hustling.
Yeah, if you have
like,
time to tell me, then you're not.
Yeah, yeah, no, that is, no, right, I'm not even trying to be nasty about it, it's, I don't even have time to go on social media at the moment. Now I'm going to, that will very quickly become like a strategy for me.
Yeah.
But to begin, my strategy was like, get customers, make my business work.
Yeah.
I don't have time to even be on social media at the moment because I'm too busy. I'd much rather be ringing someone,
yeah,
and cold calling and holding meetings, and
trying to
do, you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, no. Now people, I've actually got to the point where people are like, do you have a website? Can you give me your portfolio?
Yeah.
Harriet, what companies have you worked with? And I'm like, oh, okay, no, it's time I sorted that side out. The marketing is important. And I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying get your priorities straight and know which should come first.
It's true. I think, let's just put it this way. I guess this could be a thing where I'm just going to put this hypothesis out there. If you're comfortable, it's easier to front about you trying to become successful. If you have no choice but to survive, you'll find a means to survive. So when we're saying, okay, I want to be entrepreneurial, you might be living in your parents' house, you might have a 9-to-5 job, and you're just using that to sort of break out to whatever ambitions you want to get to.
Yeah.
But if you have nothing, and you have
bills to pay,
and you have to depend on yourself to make something happen, you will find the time to do it, but you won't have the time to go about it because that's not a situation you might not want to be in right now.
Yes.
And that's where you're just going, okay, cool, I've got to put in the groundwork, and before I even say a word, I'm going to make sure that I'm settled first before I start talking to the world about it.
Yeah, it's almost like succeed quietly at first, like do it privately, you work hard at it, you get yourself to a point, and then you go, now I feel like I can talk to the world. It's almost like you come up for air.
Yeah.
You've been too busy just like down in the ditches trying to make your company succeed, and then you're like, okay, now I'm ready to tell the world.
Yeah.
And I do think we live in this era of transparency, which I do think is great, and people trying to document the stories and document people's processes. But honestly, in that, right at the beginning, you shouldn't have time. And if you have time, you're not doing it right. You're not giving it the focus and attention that it deserves.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is kind of how I feel about
That's
it.
That's right. It's good to pick a side. I like people who pick a side. I don't like the sort of in between, or I want to please this person, but I'm actually this person. I think there are different spectrums to what, you know, we can constitute as, you know, build your own success and your own lifestyle to the point where you can live off. But when we're saying that's the only way, that's the quickest way, I think that's kind of the problem. Which is why I said, let's do the podcast, let's have a conversation about it, and let me get as many business owners to talk about this, because it's becoming this thing where you look at social media and you just go, oh, I want that kind of lifestyle, or I want to get that house, and it deludes the people.
They get tricked.
And they spend money on stupid things.
It's easy. Yeah. And then they waste all the money in all the wrong places.
Exactly.
And, right, no word of a lie, though, I did this.
Yeah, we all did.
My first business, like, that is how it works. You go into it, and you spend all your money in the wrong places, and you do
and it's an expensive lesson to learn, and it's a hard lesson to learn, and you normally end up being like depressed and down, and it's really, really difficult.
Mm.
But then as you go on and, you know, like, I think it's just about having the determination and just, you realize that you've just been distracted with fluff, yeah, like the whole time.
Mm.
You were not looking to make a functional business. You were looking to sell like something pretty.
Mm.
And I think it's that too many people wait for everything to be perfect. They want this, they want that, they want their MVP complete. Oh, I couldn't possibly get on the phone. Literally spoke to a client yesterday.
Yeah.
He said to me, I don't want to, I was like, how many sales calls have you made? Like, hustling, making this happen. He was like, oh, I didn't want to do it because the website's not finished. I was like, no. No excuse. That is not an acceptable reason.
Mm.
Well, they might not think I'm legitimate. I was like, no, not an acceptable excuse.
Yeah.
And not an acceptable reason. Mm. Get on the phone.
Mm.
He even has a product. So for me, even more, I was like, you have a product.
Yeah.
So that's really not an acceptable excuse, because you don't need a website to support your product when you have a product.
Exactly, yeah. It's weird how you put that in front of what you have, which is, it is insane, but I think there's this conversation where people say, if you don't have a presence on social media or a website, you're not even alive. And I think that just, that's not the truth, really.
It's not how it works in business. And I think that is, I think you've absolutely just hit the nail on the head, is that people are spun that that is far more important than it is.
Mm.
Or even stuff like when people are wanting to do stuff on social media, right? It just bugs me that everybody thinks everything has to be perfect, and they're too busy worrying about what other people think about their business that they're not worrying about their business working.
Mm, that's true.
And that's like the fundamental flaw for me. Like, I am happy to post nonsense on social media because, do you know what? My market will tell me that that's either nonsense or not. And then the stuff that's nonsense, I'll stop posting that.
Yeah.
And I'll post the things that are relevant, because they will react. They will tell me. That's the whole point. It's a community.
Yeah.
You're building, you know, like a community of people.
Mm.
I'm not on there to go, hey, let me tell you what you want. Mm. Let me show you how you should be.
Yeah.
And come across as perfect. Mm. Because that is just not real life. Like, that is not the life of an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Being a natural entrepreneur is hard. You probably have a lot of debt. Like, in over your head in debt, struggling to, like, find your market, struggling to then sell to your market. You're probably constantly told that you should stop, that it won't work, that you need to give up. I mean, it's hard.
That's a lot of self-doubt.
It's really, really hard. Mm. And you can't go into that if all you're going to do is try to front to the world, because you'll immediately, it's just gonna break down.
Mm.
And there's never gonna be any substance or any foundation for you to actually build something on.
Yeah. Do you think, this is probably gonna lead to, you know, more of a serious topic, do you think because you put your name on this brand, on this business, that it identifies with you, so you can't separate yourself from the business, which means that if it hurts you, if the business hurts, it hurts you. And you're not a separate entity to that business. So.
No, and at first, you're definitely not. I think eventually, when a business gets to a certain size, you can start to feel like I can separate them.
Yeah.
But at the beginning, you are your business. Mm. You really, really are. And what I've heard it quite a few times, and I think it really, really resonates is something very true to me, is people say, like, there's no such thing as business problems, there's just personal problems that show in your business. And that is so true.
Mm.
It's just so true.
It's a lot of, you know, it's almost like having a red pill on the Matrix and you just go, yeah, this is kind of what it really is and stuff. Do you think with reality kicking in, I'm saying Brexit, do you think that's going to change the way we look at entrepreneurship? Are we going to endorse it more? Are we going to shy away from it because there's a lot of uncertainty with how things are in the market?
I think
strangely, I think more and more people want to work for themselves. So I don't think it really matters. I think if you're an entrepreneur and if you want that, you'll want it in any climate.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurs are risk takers. You don't get many risk-averse entrepreneurs. Or if they are, they've been doing it a long time. Do you know what I mean? And they've learnt what good risks and bad risks are. Yeah. But I think to even take the leap to being an entrepreneur is quite a big one where you... Especially if you don't have a safety net. And I kind of think that if you do have a safety net, you're not really fully committing, because you can go in with all the intentions of having a safety net. You can literally put so much money aside and be like, this is it.
Yeah.
And when it hits this number, I'll give up. But then you're already like setting yourself up to fail, because I can guarantee at some point it's going to hit that number and it's going to go below it, and you just have to commit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to commit.
Yeah.
You look, and this is where I would say, you know, I love listening to stories of other entrepreneurs, because it really inspires me. Every single successful entrepreneur, and this is what I think really inspires me, is that every successful entrepreneur almost failed.
Hmm.
Right? There is not one successful business that didn't almost fail. And I think to the outside world, we hear about all the highs and how fantastic it was and how easy it was and how they think it was an overnight success. It wasn't.
Mm.
There was probably a year of someone grafting. They just don't tell you about that year.
Yeah, yeah.
And even, you know, like Airbnb, I don't know if you've ever like heard their story, but they were like, they have books of just credit cards, of all the credit card debt, maxing it out just in sheer attempts to make the business work.
Wow.
Even Elon Musk, when he, like, it was his last rocket for SpaceX, and he couldn't pay his rent, and he'd already been a billionaire. So he'd been a billionaire and then lost it and invested it all and couldn't make rent. And I just think that's what it takes.
Mm.
You know, like...
You got to risk it.
Yeah. So I feel like with all the uncertainty and economic things, the economy goes up and down.
Yeah.
It's not about that. I think... For me, being an entrepreneur is more of a state of mind than it is an actual place that you're in.
Yeah.
I think you can be an entrepreneur and still be in business, but the way that you will be approaching that business and the risk that you'll be taking, the way you'll be doing things, still kind of puts you in that place of being maybe like an entrepreneur expert or something like that, where you're looking to sell yourself all the time, and you're selling things, and you're pushing yourself forward in that way. So,
do you think entrepreneurs actually made, or do you think they're kind of born?
Mm-hmm. I think they can be both. I think some people are natural entrepreneurs.
Right.
My sister's a natural entrepreneur. She started her first business. Oh, actually, her very first business was about at 13.
Wow.
And at 15, she had such a successful business that she had to choose between her A-levels and a business, and chose her A-levels and just let it die, and was like inundated with orders and had no infrastructure and all these kind of things. Then at 19, finally like took the leap to start her own company. Now, I never ever thought of starting my own business, no joke.
Mm.
And then when she started hers, I was like, oh, this looks interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, it looks kind of easy. Oh, yeah. And got involved in it and realised it wasn't easy. That's what I can tell you.
Sure,
and this is what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, like it looks simple from the outside, but it isn't. Mm. But I would say I was made into an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And she was born one. So I do think that you can get both types.
Yeah, and that's always a good sort of mix to have, because, you know, you don't want to say it's, you know, God-given, like, this person's entrepreneur, because that won't make life interesting anyways. But
no.
If you want to decide to do something, it's good to have the mental state to say, you know what, I'm going to commit and I'm going to go for it.
Yeah, I think honestly, I just think it's a state of mind, and anyone can change the state of mind.
Yeah.
And it's even funny, because when you spend a lot of time with entrepreneurs, you can't help but start to move in that kind of direction. And that's why I know, you know, like... my mum and her sister just set up a business, and they're like 60 plus, and they've just decided like, we're going to do it, and we're going to risk everything, and we're going to go for this.
Mm.
And they couldn't have done that 10 years ago. They weren't in the mindset where they wanted to.
Mm.
And I just think that's the kind of thing where
You know, like, it's never too late, and it's never too... Yeah. And it's just about being in the right frame of mind and just pushing with it.
I think because it is contagious, I guess, even the energy that you can exude from just talking about your passions and about, you know, building something of your own and having that sovereignty. And then you look at the time of the world we live in, we have, you know, mobile devices that can help you to work wherever you want to work. You don't have to depend on any gatekeepers. You're easily accessible. And I think that just provides that platform, again, to just, you know, try to see if it works for you. If it doesn't, it's probably because it's not ready for you right now. But you can obviously make something out of yourself. So it's just an amazing time to do it, really.
Yeah, I think as well, you start to surround yourself with like-minded people, and you don't even, it's not even always intentional.
Yeah.
But it gets draining, everybody constantly telling you you can't do it.
Mm.
And you'll just find that those people just don't seem to turn up in your life as much because you'll be more focused on trying to make it work.
Yeah.
And the more you focus on trying to make it work, the more time you start to spend with other people who are also trying to make things work.
Yeah,
and happened. Then you start to spend it with people who are making it work. And then you're like, right, I'm going to go harder. I'm going to be like that.
Yeah.
And then it's just this constant like leveling up, I think, of your peers. Mm. So
it's crazy. Maybe it's just the way humans work. It's just when you find your tribe, it's almost like you naturally fit in. It's like you almost leave the nest and you're just like trying to find yourself like almost in the wilderness. And you're just like, yeah, I need to, you know, find people like me to survive. And you start gravitating to each other and you just realize, oh, you're becoming more of a different person because you're one of these characters.
Yeah, you do change. You do really, really change and evolve as a person, I think.
Yeah.
I definitely know that if I saw myself like 5 years ago, I don't think I'd recognize the person I was. So... No, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think she was very young and naive and hopeful and not and a little bit afraid of hard work and not committed and not in the mindset.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of thing of, like, it forged me.
Yeah.
And that failure forged me, and that's what I mean. Like, I'm not afraid of failing anymore. Yeah. I'm just like, I think sometimes it's almost about having belief in yourself and just being like, look, I will find a way. I will make it work.
Yeah.
I always ring my sister and I give her like a big speech if I ever feel like she's starting to think, oh, you know, this is getting hard. We always give, it's like what we do back and forth.
Yeah.
And I do think you need that, someone to just be like, no, suck it up, make it work.
Yeah.
And you do. It's a good way of looking at things.
Yeah, I think your network is your key to pretty much what you do and how
you can't do it on your own.
I think that's the thing. I think we all look at these success stories, even Elon Musk and, like you said, Mark Zuckerberg, but they all had someone in their team. Maybe they're not the most highlighted people.
No, they massively had someone in their team.
Yeah.
They could not do it alone.
But no one
and
talks.
Even like mentors, no. You know, like, I think that's another big mistake I made. I didn't look for enough mentors and I didn't look to surround myself with people who would push me and kind of give me accountability and responsibility.
Yeah.
When you're on your own, it's a lot easier to give up because you don't feel like you're letting anybody else down either.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, you can make an excuse, well, if I'm only letting me down, like, that's fine. But the more people you get involved, it's almost like, I don't know. I actually call it imposter syndrome, and I still say it now. I still feel like every day I'm trying to, like, catch up to the person that I'm saying I am. And not as in a fronting manner, and not as in like I'm just being flashy to people, but more as in like I will genuinely sometimes be like, wow, can I do this? You know, you're gonna have those, but if you feel the fear, it probably means like you're heading in the right direction. If you're scared, what a nice problem to have. I will always think, oh my gosh, what if I can't deliver? What if I sold all this and I can't deliver? And I'm like, well, that's a new problem.
Yeah.
I've never had to have a problem before of what if I can't deliver all these orders that I keep getting. So
it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, it is. And your problems will change. And that's how you can tell you're leveling up, I think, is the problems change. Rather than it being like, oh, I don't have any money to pay my bills, it becomes, can I deliver on all these orders that I've got? Yeah. Can I do this? Can I? And I just think, well, what a nice... How do I handle? Oh, I have no infrastructure. Oh, I have no website. What a nice problem to have. Before, my problem was like, I have no clients. How, like, what do I do? I'm literally making no money. It's bad.
Yeah.
I'm in debt. I can't do anything. What a horrific problem to have. Now I'm like, oh, well, if my biggest problem is I don't have a website, fantastic.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's a step up.
Yeah, that's definitely a step up. I think that just having that perspective, you just mentioned it all. Your growth, your journey, everything, and, you know, smallest problems might look like the biggest ones, but if you look at it from hindsight, they're not really the biggest problems.
No.
And sometimes, as long as you're in the game, I believe in life, if you're in the game of life, and you're still healthy and, you know, you've pretty much still got a second chance to do what you need to do.
I always think, you know, sometimes people be like, oh, I've just lost this £1 million client. Do you know what?
Mm.
That is not a problem that you would have faced 10 years ago. 10
yeah.
years ago, it would have been, how do I even get £1 million client?
Exactly.
So, even though, you know, like, that might hurt you,
mm.
I always just think it's a different problem.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It's at least it'll feel like a big deal now.
Mm.
But again, in another year's time, you'll probably be like thinking, oh, what was that problem? Do you know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah. And maybe it's just fate, but sometimes it's not meant to be. Sometimes it's meant to be. So you just don't know. And I think the more you put yourself out there to make those chances and take those opportunities, the better it is for you in the long run.
Well, it's when the market will start to dictate to you.
Yeah.
They'll tell you.
Yeah.
You'll know
mm.
where you should be going and where you shouldn't be going.
Yeah.
It becomes pretty apparent, so.
Yeah, that's a very good thing too. So, obviously, discussing podcasts. Before we wrap this up, is there anything that you would like to give in terms of advice or, you know, anything that you would want to plug? Because
well, if people need any help on their core processes in preparation for scaling, I think a lot of startups make getting investment their number one priority, and then they get it and they're like, oh wow, how do we scale? And now I've got expectations, and now I've actually got to deliver this, and I've got money, so I can't even use money as an excuse anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, absolutely get in contact and I can help people scale. But I'd just say as well that the advice I would give is to make it work, like get your traction and go do it, go sell. The reason businesses don't succeed is not because they have a bad product, or, well, occasionally it is, but more often than not, it's because nobody knows about them.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, go and talk to people about your business and go and get them and do it like old school.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll probably then when you get to that point, then you can come contact me and I can help you with your processes to scale.
Yeah, and then also do the website last.
Yes, do the website last.
Yeah.
You can just tell that I like marketing is not my forte. So this is where my sister helps me all the time.
No, and it's, like you said, there's a team for everything. And as long as you're self-aware, I'm sure you can find your niche and focus on that. And then obviously understand your market and then just keep going. And, you know, if you had to pivot, but don't give up, because you never know what's around the corner.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very good summary.
Yeah. Well, this is a perfect episode to wrap it up, you know. I'm happy to sort of talk about processes, because I do that on a day-to-day, and to talk to you about processes and operations, it's really good to have that realistic viewpoint on businesses as a whole.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for listening, and take care.
Yeah.
Hey podcast listeners, thanks for listening, and thanks for my special guest, and thanks for clicking that play button. But I need you to do four things for me. I want you to like, comment, subscribe, and share this content. It will help tremendously with the growth of this podcast, and I'm producing more content than ever. So I want you guys to be the first to know, and I want others to know as well. So do those four things for me and help this podcast grow to a bigger platform. Thanks for listening.